Good morning, and welcome to Betrayed in Deepest Consequence, KGNU's monthly show based on the quotation in Macbeth, "Oftentimes, to win us to our harm, the instruments of darkness tell us truths, win us with honest trifles, to betray us in deepest consequence." I'm your host, Jim Banks, and this morning our theme is Perfect Storm. Hillary Clinton is now the presumptive Democratic nominee for president, and I'm worried that the perfect storm that has brought us Trump might also capsize Hillary's presidential ambitions. Hillary's ship has some holes, and yesterday I talked with Robert Perry about Hillary's vulnerabilities. Robert is an excellent investigative journalist, and he is the founder of Consortium News, a news source I read every day. I asked Robert about Hillary Clinton and the perfect storm.
Well, the problem is that Hillary Clinton, when she became Secretary of State, decided that she did not want to use the typical government servers system. So she set up one basically in the basement of her house in Chappaqua, New York. I guess there was a backup server around Colorado somewhere. So she had this insecure system, one that was not much different from what a lot of Americans have. It was not what the government wanted. The government tries to funnel people and demands it for the lower level people into a more secure system. And still, even the secure system has had cases of efforts to hack it. But presumably, the government has more standards for protecting these things than you would get from a basement server. So she did this in part because she said she wanted the convenience of using her BlackBerry to send emails. She's also, in a sense, some of the material indicates that she was also sensitive about having her correspondence possibly examined either through transparency laws in the future by historians, or close to the present by congressional demands for information. So it appears she was doing this not for any kind of grand reason, but out of a sense of what was best for her. It turns out, however, that because some of the information in these emails has now been determined to have been sensitive, that including the identities of intelligence agents and other matters that are not just top secret but even above top secret, that this presents her with a potential legal problem. We've seen in the past, for instance, former CIA directors caught up with this kind of problem. John Deutsch, who was the CIA director during Bill Clinton's presidency, faced criminal charges for having some of this secret material transferred onto a home computer. He was about to plead to a misdemeanor when President Clinton, as leaving office, gave him a pardon, so he wouldn't have to do that. More recently, the CIA director, David Petraeus, was caught up in a similar scandal where he gave his notebooks, which contained highly sensitive material, including the names of agents, to his girlfriend biographer, and then lied about it to the FBI when they asked him. He was, however, forced to plead guilty to a misdemeanor. They gave him essentially a slap on the wrist, but he still has a criminal record because of this situation. Perhaps the most pertinent case to this was with John Kiriakou, who was a former CIA officer who was asked by a reporter to give out a phone number for a retired CIA person. Kiriakou gave him the phone number. Turned out that the retired officer was still, his work for the government was still classified, so Kiriakou was aggressively prosecuted by the Obama administration and was ultimately forced to plead guilty and receive a 30-month prison sentence. So this sort of sloppy handling, irresponsible handling of sensitive secrets by Secretary Clinton could present a criminal problem for her if the standards that have been applied to other officials are applied to her. Clearly, the Justice Department would not find it very comfortable to indict the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee and someone who was Secretary of State under Barack Obama. But that is not so far out of the possibility. Now, it may not happen for various political reasons, but I think if it doesn't happen, if there's some finding that she exposed government secrets, at least potentially to foreign adversaries by not taking proper care of them, that's certainly a black mark for anyone who wants to be commander-in-chief.
Robert, she would say, and I understand this a little bit, that, you know, Hillary, have been under intense scrutiny my whole life. I really don't have any privacy. I would like to have a little bit of privacy. I'd like to have a private server. How is that true to some extent, and how is that not true?
Well, I was here during the 1990s, and I covered the Clinton scandals. And I wrote generally defensively about the Clintons because many of those scandals were ginned up. Some were based on outright lies and fabrications, things like the Vince Foster murder case,
right,
where he clearly committed suicide. And there were a number of those kinds of efforts to use scandal. The Republicans were into this idea at that point of destroying Democrats through these kind of scandal-mongering efforts. Eventually, however, you know, some of the abuses from the Clintons were real. And the Whitewater case, which wasn't much of a case about economic wrongdoing or financial wrongdoing, but it did lead to Bill Clinton's personal life being revealed and his deceptions about that. So, but certainly I can understand how Hillary Clinton, having experienced all that, would feel very sensitive, understandably, to that kind of scrutiny. Because sometimes it's not fair. Sometimes it is efforts to just destroy you based on digging up things about your life that can then be misinterpreted or distorted or exaggerated. However, you know, she still also had a responsibility as Secretary of State, a larger responsibility to protect government secrets, particularly things like the names of secret agents. Those are life and death questions. If some foreign adversary were able to penetrate her basement server, and according to the recent IG report at State, there were attempts to do that. How successful they were, it's still not entirely clear. But let's say someone did penetrate those servers, and some people have claimed they did, and were able to extract the names of people on dangerous assignments for the United States government. That could put them and their at risk, their lives at risk, and even the people they were contacting at risk. So I can understand the human feeling of having been bruised so much by the scandal mongering of the 1990s and not wanting to provide any information that might be twisted and turned in those ways. But she had a much bigger responsibility. And in legal terms, when you commit an offense for reasons of self-interest, even if they're somewhat understandable, but they're still reasons of self-interest, that's considered a corrupt motive. So it's not a defense in legal terms. If I can, maybe it might be mitigating if it gets to a jury, but in terms of how it is considered under the law is still the law. And if I find the law kind of unpleasant or inconvenient and decide I just don't want to follow it because of that, it's not really much of a justification. And so she faces that sort of problem, that that she put her own personal interests ahead of the safety and the, possibly the life or death situations of people who were doing work for the U.S. government. And even though she says, well, they were not classified at the time, they were not marked classified at the time, she still has a responsibility to protect sensitive secrets. For instance, in the case of Petraeus, Petraeus had written down these things in his notebooks and shared them with his biographer. They never got out public, but even though they were in his notebooks, he recognized that what he was writing down in some cases was extremely sensitive, and he recognized later that he should not have shared them with someone who was not authorized to see them. It's a similar case with Clinton. She included things in these emails that should not have been there. And they weren't just matters of things of confidential, which is the lowest level of classification. Some of them were turned out to have been material that should have been very highly classified. So that I think her argument that, well, it was she'd been through some hard times in the 1990s, and while we may sympathize with that, it's not a particularly good argument if indeed someone wants to prosecute you for not doing your job properly.
Robert, you've observed the Clintons for a long time. Do you think both Bill and Hillary get as close to the line morally, legally, ethically as they can without going over, and that some of that email issue is about that she tried to, I don't know, be not, well, maybe deceptive, but just tried to go right up against the line, and that this time it's not going to work out so well?
Well, it may work out okay. I mean, if I were a betting person, I would say probably she'll get off without being too damaged. It's going to be a very tough judgment by the Attorney General as to whether to proceed. And clearly, politics plays into these issues. It did with Petraeus, for instance. Petraeus got a very, very light treatment for what he did when it was arguably more egregious than what, say, Kiriakou did. Yet Kiriakou ended up with a couple years in prison up in Loretto, Pennsylvania, at the federal prison there. And Petraeus was able to go back to his corporate positions and giving high-priced speaking appearances. So, you know, so politics does matter. If you're someone that is sort of favored by the establishment, you probably get a more generous treatment. And certainly Hillary Clinton fits that mold. Now, whether or not she... But to your larger point, I would say that we've seen over and over again that the Clintons do play word games. They do, you know, the definition of is kind of games.
Yeah.
They do think they're often smarter than everybody else. They have obviously been close to the legal line in a number of cases. I would say to their defense, however, as I say, I did cover the 1990s, and much of the attack line that the Republicans used was rather egregious. They were using at that point the new thing was talk radio,
right?
And so a lot of this scandal mongering fed into that. There was also a kind of a fevered pitch on the right. They wanted to have their own scandals, I guess, their own conspiracy theories to work with. Maybe they saw that the Democrats had been doing more of that and they wanted to have their share. There was a lot of unnecessary, ridiculous investigating that went on in the 1990s by the Republicans. That doesn't mean that all the things they looked at were false. Some of them turned out not to be, but a lot of them were way over the top, exaggerated. And even Ken Starr, who was one of the Republican prosecutors who was appointed during that time to look into this stuff, he's expressed regret as to how it all went. He got caught up in that too. So I do think that the Clintons are certainly responsible for some of the harm that has happened around them. But they also they're sort of paranoids who really have enemies. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, Robert. One last question about the emails. I read yesterday that what Hillary said about trade negotiations will not be released from her emails until late November after the election. What might be in there that she does not want everybody to know?
Well, I don't know. I did read that too. My impression is it may be more what the Obama administration doesn't want to have out that is in there now. As you know, these trade agreements are done in with utmost secrecy, which is a little bit odd because then they're sold to the American public as being in the interest of the American people. Some of the corporations that are involved have much more access to what's happening than the average person does. So much of this is kept under wraps until the Congress sort of agrees to do a fast track, and then it's somewhat released publicly, and then but they can't really change it, and so there has been this effort to sort of shove these trade agreements down the throats of the public, and that has certainly become an issue in this campaign. It's one of the main issues that Donald Trump has used. It's also a major point that Senator Sanders has raised, that these trade agreements, which are put together by government bureaucrats, often working hand in glove with major multinational corporations, don't really serve the interest of many Americans. Many Americans feel they've been essentially thrown out of their jobs and thrown out of their homes because of this, really thrown out of the middle class in many cases. And that resentment is certainly fueling much of the populist spirit that we've seen during campaign 2016.
Robert, tell us a little bit now about the Clinton Foundation. I don't know a lot about it, but recently I've been seeing a lot of news and opinion pieces about, again, the issue of kind of evil and the appearance of evil. There was a report yesterday that Saudi Arabia had contributed almost $1 billion to the Clinton Foundation, and then like 2 months later, the State Department granted an arms deal to Saudi Arabia for $3 or $4 billion in arms. What is the Clinton Foundation, and how might Hillary be vulnerable in terms of Republican attacks in the fall?
Well, the Clinton Foundation was something that that ex-President Bill Clinton set up with a desire to tap into some of this wealth around the world and then redirect it for various programs, some of which are development programs in poor countries. I'm not an expert on the Clinton Foundation by any means, but generally speaking, some people have felt they have done some good work in addressing diseases and issues of water access, things of that sort in many parts of the world. The problem with the Clinton Foundation is that because it involves essentially getting very wealthy people and wealthy countries to kick in, it creates the possibility, and certainly in many cases the reality, of conflicts of interest. Rich people may be very generous and want to give away their money, but many rich people also want something back for giving away their money. So what you get are situations where some person in the with interest in extracting natural resources, for instance, might contribute heavily to the Clinton Foundation with hopes that that will help him get access to certain markets, that Clinton would maybe become an ambassador for him with some foreign leaders, or open doors that would not be opened otherwise. And so you get that kind of back-scratching, pay-to-play quality in any of these situations. And it also involves countries which have interests with the United States and feel that if they can be generous toward the Clinton Foundation, countries like Saudi Arabia, that might give them an extra feeling of goodwill with, say, Secretary of State Clinton when she was in office. So you get all these intersecting conflicts of interest. Now, some may be appearances and some may be real. It becomes difficult to sort them out. They're done at that level of power and influence that very few of us can get access to even understand them. And if you do get access, you know, you're often in a situation where you might have one source sort of whispering in your ear, but then you have all these important people saying, oh, no, that could not possibly be true. So they're hard stories to write. Even if that one person whispering in your ear is the one telling the truth and everyone else is lying, it still makes it a difficult story. So that's sort of this problem. And whether the Clintons did this simply out of the goodness of their heart, or if they were also wanting to keep in the power game, which this allowed them to do, there's also that issue. So whether or not it leads to problems for Hillary Clinton assuming she gets the Democratic nomination and runs for president in the fall, it certainly has left open a lot of touchy questions that would probably best not have to be entangling for someone seeking the presidency. But as I say, you know, it may well be that nothing hard, there's no significant wrongdoing that might come out, and therefore it may not be something that really dents her campaign.
Robert, is the Clinton sort of conflict of interest and the appearance of evil, but you can't really prove it, is that likely to change if Hillary becomes president? Or is that, like I mentioned earlier, is that just the way they operate and this kind of thing is just going to continue throughout her 4 years and maybe 8 years?
Well, it's always hard to predict the future, but certainly the patterns are there. And often you have to rely on how people have behaved in the past to anticipate how they'll behave in the future. I guess my bigger question regarding this idea of the Democrats nominating Hillary Clinton and then her possibly moving on to be president is that this is the first time really in my adult life, I would say, where the Democrats have taken a position of nominating someone who favors aggressive war. The Democrats have since 68, since the decision by LBJ not to run for re-election and the emergence ultimately of the McGovern wing of the party, as it was called, the Democrats might say they've been reluctant warriors at times. I mean, they certainly President Obama has waged at war for 8 years or going on 8 years of his presidency. But there's been a reluctance to it. And the Democrats have generally been beaten up or criticized for not being tough enough in terms of using military force. And the Republicans have taken a position more of being in favor of military action, probably George W. Bush being the most obvious example. But you go back to Ronald Reagan, even George H.W. Bush. The Republicans have been the tough guys, the hawks, and the Democrats have been, you know, often going along, agreeing to some minor conflict here or there, but being what you might call reluctant warriors. Hillary Clinton has favored aggressive war, and she voted for the Iraq War, of course, and she has favored military solutions as Secretary of State. She pushed, along with other hawks in the Obama administration, for what became a meaningless escalation in Afghanistan, the so-called counterinsurgency escalation in 2009. She pushed for the Libya conflict. She pushed for a direct U.S. invasion in Syria. She often will use nicer terms like no-fly zones or safe zones, but what clearly that came to mean in Libya was to do a regime change, a very, very violent regime change. So she's a person who has, she's a hawk. She's essentially a neoconservative in every sense that we understand the term. She may phrase it differently than the neoconservatives do. She may emphasize the humanitarian nature of war, but she favors war. And I think, so this is the first time we'll see the Democrats actually moving to the right of the Republicans in terms of fighting war. Since 1968, Trump, for all his many problems, has tended to look at these things in a more skeptical way about using military force. There are a few exceptions there, but in terms of dealing with, say, Russia, dealing with China, dealing with Libya, dealing with the Middle East, he's argued against more U.S. military intervention. Where Hillary Clinton has been a hawk and an advocate for more. So I think that's a really dramatic and important change that's been largely ignored and missed during this entire campaign. And I think it may redound more to how the Democrats move forward in the future in terms of her presidency, if that's what happens, than whether or not she continues to cut corners.
That is a really good point, Robert. Thank you. And I wanted to conclude with one more question for you. You have written a lot in your career and have, in my opinion, written very well about October surprises. If Hillary is the nominee, are there any October surprises that she's going to have to face from anyone out there that might hamper or hinder her becoming president?
Well, it's always hard to see the future like that, but the main October surprises that we've seen, look at 1968 and 1980s. In 1968, that was where Richard Nixon went behind LBJ's back, Johnson's back, and helped sabotage the Paris peace talks. In 1980, Republicans went behind Jimmy Carter's back and tried to muck up his negotiations to free those 52 hostages in Iran. So you had those kinds of interferences that we've pretty well documented. I think are historically probably going to be accepted as real. In the case of what happens now, you could certainly see Republicans playing certain games because the Democrats trying to resolve certain issues. For instance, Libya was Hillary's signature project as Secretary of State. It's a mess. There are now three competing governments. The U.S. tried to impose a new one called the unity government, but instead of becoming a unity government, it's just become a third government competing with the other two governments. So you certainly have playgrounds where some mischievous operatives could go in and try to create more difficulty. But again, these are hard things to predict. I don't really see an issue as distinct as the Vietnam War was in 68 or the Iranian hostage crisis was in 1980. But there's always these opportunities for political operatives to try to prove their value to the Republican candidate by pulling a stunt like this. But again, I'm not sure any of these things are focused. The American people are not focused on Libya the way they were focused on Vietnam in 68 or on the Iran situation in 1980.
Robert, do you think Hillary will be our next president?
Well, again, I don't like to predict those kinds of things, but certainly the way Donald Trump has been shooting himself in the foot since he sort of nailed down the Republican nomination, instead of moving to be more presidential, which I thought he might be somewhat effective in doing, he seems to not want to get out of this sort of quarreling kind of behavior that he used during the Republican race to get the nomination. So, I mean, it's a difficult one, and it's a difficult choice for Americans because I'm not sure this is one where I don't know, you know, if you're voting for the lesser evil, you have to sort of figure out what you consider the most important issues. If it's war and peace, if it's a question of will we have a third world war because of, you know, efforts to provoke Russia or be aggressive against Russia while Russia then gets aggressive back, or China. It's hard to know who would be the better choice there in terms of trying to keep the peace and trying to work things out. But then there are other issues. The Supreme Court's obviously an important issue. Go through some of the economic questions. So it's a tough one. You know, usually there's a clearer choice, even if you're just voting lesser evil strategies. There's usually a clearer set of equations you can put into your calculations. This one's going to be a hard one.
Robert, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Robert Perry talking about Hillary Clinton and the perfect storm. I'm Jim Banks. Thanks for listening this morning. And please tune in next month for another edition of Betrayed in Deepest Consequence.